What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Being able to say that a few times now, and every single time, I am so honored, Ben, Billy, especially this time of year. I'm not going to lie to you, especially this time of year. But thank you again for coming on.
Well, you always make me feel good. So I always enjoy this conversation. So, you know, it's been pleasurable every year.
All right. Well, here we go. Here we go, Billy. Here we go. This is it. The rubber meets the road time. We've done a few of these the last couple of years. And, you know, I do want to like sort of take people a little bit behind the scenes of, you know, when we first started talking. It was, I think it was after, well, I mean, I'm going to exclude the time you came to the Red Sox for a brief minute and, you know,
right. But
when we started talking about the Hall of Fame stuff, we had done the Hall of Fame ballot reveal with D.B. Sweeney of reprising the role of Shoeless Joe Jackson coming out of the cornfield. And you respond to it and you were the one guy that Shoeless Joe said, yes, we approve of this guy, of Billy Wagner. And we started talking about this before. I mean, if of all the great honors in your life, to have Shoeless Joe Jackson be like, that's the guy.
Well, I always felt like I should have played back then anyway. So, you know, to have Shoeless Joe Jackson actually come out and tell me I you know, I'm his guy, that was, you know, that was something awesome. But, you know, but also being a fan of DB and the you know, Eight Men Out and Lonesome Dove and Cutting Edge and you name it, you know, being a fan anyway, that was always, that's something I thought was pretty unique. So, you know, I was in awe in just that response.
Can I ask you, like, so just along those lines, what's your favorite baseball movie? What is it?
Gosh, I tell you, you know, I'm so sentimental. I mean, just about any, I mean, you know, you catch me on the right moment. It could be The Natural. You know, I think it's funny, you know, I'm a big softy, but, you know, Love of the Game.
Clear the Mechanism, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, just, you know, when that was coming out was near the end of my career. And so, you know, have thrown a being part of a no hitter in Yankee Stadium and seeing, you know, seeing the end of the road. You know, it was one of those moves you could kind of just, you know, could see in looking back at all the steps and the journey and, you know, where you've come from and stuff. That was something that was pretty sentimental. But I mean, I like all baseball moves. You know, I don't know if, you know, I'm not a – I think of a, if a critic says that it's a D movie, I automatically am attracted to it. So I love every – all those movies. I mean – I've watched Bull Durham and all these, you know, Major League. And I enjoyed the little interest. And I think being involved in the game, I think that's when you look at these little interests and you sit there and you go, yeah, that's right. That, you know, or not so much. But, I mean, I think being involved has made watching these movies a whole lot more interesting because – You can identify a lot more with some of the things.
Well, I mean, you just hit on some, and like I could say, okay, there's part of you where Wild Thing, who can't relate to that as a closer, or the like I said, Kevin Costner for The Love of the Game, Clear Mechanism, right?
Right.
I mean, all the stuff. I mean, even like this Bull Durham. It's
right.
Coming up and you see the rookie who is like, hey, just learn the cliches, rookie. Just learn the cliches. So.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's so much to identify through my career in these movies. And you know, you always grab for that piece here and there because, you know, these little cliche lines tend to work out. I mean, is, you know, clear the mechanism and in that moment where things are going really fast and you make your debut appearance in Boston and, you're trying to impress the team and, all of a sudden the noise is just really loud and you're trying to take a deep breath. I mean, these things, I'm probably dating myself, but these are things that I think make a difference because you're always talking to yourself when you're pitching. There's always that positive side. You're like, hey, calm down, make a pitch, these things. And so, some of these things you use on the mound, like to slow things down.
What was the most nervous you were ever on a baseball field?
The one that stands out is Bobby Cox's. Our could have been my last game and Bobby Cox's last game, and it happened to be against the Phillies to get into the playoffs. We needed to win, and I think Colorado or somebody needed to lose. It was something like that. If we won, we were in. But, it was – I mean, a packed house, it was a Bobby Cox appreciation day. And, I'm a huge, I grew up as a Braves fan. So I end up, he brings me in the game with runners on base. I think it's 3-run lead or something like that. And I think the very first pitch is laced off the wall. And I mean, my first thought is, I'm probably not getting out of Atlanta alive if I don't get this right. And, I remember it just kind of slowing down. And after I gave up that hit, I think I punched out the next four guys, which kind of made things great. But as soon as that ball hit that wall, it was like, it might have been bases loaded. I think I'm, it's, really one of those, swallow your tongue moments and heart's in your throat. And you're like, oh shit.
So that was at the end, toward the end of your career?
Yeah,
which is amazing, right? So, like, it speaks to everything you're talking about, that feeling you have on a baseball mound, where I ask you, the most nervous you've been, and you went to one of your last games. I mean, that's what's incredible about baseball. This is to have the jitters at that moment.
You never want to let anybody down. And I mean, being a pleaser, you do whatever you got to do to win. And so taking the ball and a guy that sticks out for me that, took the ball every time and I got to play with was Papelbon. He I'd been closing longer than he had and all these things. But when I got to Boston watching him, I mean, he took the ball and there was always this, just a pride of being able to take that ball every day. And a lot of times you're taking that ball and you could probably use a day off mentally, physically or whatever. And, but I think those, when you watch the guys that did it so well, like Mariano and Trevor and Franco and, Bruce Sutter and Eck and all these guys, I think you just start to realize that you just have to, no matter if you're at 100%, you just step in there and you do what you got to do. And sometimes, amazing enough, you get through it and stuff. And sometimes you have to grin and bear it and stuff.
We're going to we'll ease into your awesomeness and all the Hall of Fame stuff. But I do want to say, you mentioned Papelbon. And when you came to the Red Sox, you were setting up for Papelbon. And I'm sure I've said this at our other podcasts that we've done, but I just repeated it today to a friend of mine, something that you said about how the ninth inning is so different. I remember you saying, I remember where you were.
Absolutely.
We talked in the dugout. We were saying this and you were saying like how, cause all of a sudden now you had the eighth and he's like, listen, I'm just telling you, the ninth inning is different. It just is, right?
It is. And you can't explain it until you've been in that. Their approach against you, how they view you. I mean, it's like pitching in any type of game where you've got a big lead or you don't have a lead. A lot of times how a hitter faces you and values you dictates the moment. I mean, a 1-run lead and a guy can go out there and pump strikes and do it. You can pitch in and out of the zone a little bit, but when you're ahead or behind by substantial. Let me tell you, that hitter's not worried about it. He is not worried about the same stuff that failing is in the ninth inning. And when you go out there and stuff. And I tell you, I mean, my ERA in games, I'll tell you right now, I think the first two or three playoff games I ever were in, I mean, it was like 13-2 when I came in. And I think I gave up two runs each. And I mean, you're sitting here where you face these guys and it's a 3-2 ball game. They swing different. Their pressure's on them a little bit more. And so it is different. It'll always be different. And I mean, it's not that you're going out there with any different intent, but you have way more room to make a mistake and stuff like that. And, you know, if you're coming in to get an inning, the only thing those are the days that for me that I was always going, it's stat day. I mean, you're self-motivating yourself. You're like, hey, punch out three, you know, and it's very tough to go out there in that same mindset because hitters they're not as juiced up. I mean,
no, their focus is 10 times what it is in the eighth. Well, no, I mean, 10 times, but
yeah. I agree. You know what? And that's why I think guys that set me up, you know, were able to go out there and do it. I mean, it's a different mindset to go out there, even in the eighth. If you go in the eighth and you're pitching in a save type situation to get it to the ninth, it's different than going out there in a 4-5 run lead and you're throwing and knowing that you have some, room to give up a run here or there. Not every pitch is a pressure pitch. There's something to that. I think it's just, you know, I'd like to say we all go out there in the ninth inning with a 5-run lead and go, oh man, you know, I'm going to treat this like I'm facing, you know, top three hitters in the world and say, it's just not because you're so used to that pressure of one and a two, you know, and a 3-run lead seems really easy. A bloop, error, a walk, all of a sudden you're a pitch away. And I mean, because everybody likes to put you in that microscope, but you know, every pitch in the ninth inning is that pressure cooker because it has a different meaning than, you know, in the eighth. You have another bat to deal with in the eighth, but some of these you just have to, you know, you get in there and you're pounding strikes and you give up a run and, you know, everybody's like, I mean, it's hard to pitch the same.
Yeah. So then that leads us to why you are a Hall of Famer. One of the reasons why closers should be viewed in that light. And I am fully, I'll just say it out of the gate. I am fully confident, Billy. This is it. This is the year. You've paid your dues. You've gone through enough years of anxiety, whatever it is. Your time has come. And so one of the questions I have, so this is the 10th time you've gone through this, right, man?
Right.
Man, January, the last 10, the last 9 Januaries.
The first couple weren't as bad because, you know, you're happy to stay on the ballot. You know, it's like,
Were you worried about that the first time?
Well, the first one, yeah. The first one, you're like, you know, you're at 10% and you're like, wow, 10%. And, you know, I've done a few interviews since then and doing them, I did one yesterday and they were talking about, did you ever think that you would start at 10 and be so close to being in the Hall of Fame? So they put it into perspective, but you know, the first time you're on, you're staying on, you know, and you're making very minimal, you know, headway. And then all of a sudden it's sitting at 30 and then all of a sudden 65, 68, all of a sudden it's, oh, wait a minute. And then you have that moment like last year. And, you know, for me, it was probably one of the most humiliating and, you know, gut-wrenching moments was come up short. But I was on the field with my team. NBC Nightly News shows up. I have no idea they're going to be there. They mic me up because I'm not going to say no.
Yeah.
They mic me up. I'm going through the whole thing. They stopped practice to tell me that I didn't make the Hall of Fame and I was 5 votes short. I mean, the epitome of what humility, what do you have to do? And so, gosh, it was, that was a very difficult moment to have to go through. And so now going through this, you know, going through this last moment, you're sitting here and, you know, there is huge anxieties. I didn't have this much anxiety when I pitched because of I had somewhat control. Now you have no control. And so, you know, keeping myself busy has been I try to do something constantly or go to sleep or something just to, cause I mean, it's, you know, it's one of those moments in your life that changes your life. I mean, if you get into the Hall of Fame, you're viewed completely different than, you know, when you're not. I mean, you know, unfortunately guys that I think should have been in the Hall of Fame is Don Mattingly, you know, Dale Murphy, guys like that, you know, there's a difference with the title HOF on the name. And, you know, that's an important moment in your career when you know what you went through and put out to get to this point.
So last year we did this and I was optimistic. I'll be honest with you, you know, and I would do anything. You know, I sang from the mountaintop starting with Shoeless Joe walking out of the cornfield. I mean, no, actually starting with batting stance guy, you know, doing this for you. But so when you go into last year, you're close and a lot of people are thinking, and really also we look at the trends and it was sort of trending that way and you're trying to keep busy. You're coaching the team. I would imagine last year was a little bit different because you probably let it creep in a little bit more, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard not to. When you get at that point and you're like, the year before you were 27 votes away. And so you're like, man, you know, that's not bad. Yeah. And so you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. You know, next year, I probably, you know, there's a real good chance. And then all of a sudden, you know, everybody's like, hey, yeah, you know, this is a good, you know, you should probably get in this year. And all of a sudden it's the, you shoulds, or, you know, you should be in the Hall of Fame. All of a sudden, you know, there's nothing you can do but smile and grin and bear this a little bit. And so, you know, last year was very difficult. And I think this year has gotten increasingly, worse just because, you know, I wouldn't say I've tried very hard, but I do watch this a little bit more now. And so, you know, you're seeing the trends and, you know, you're just waiting on that shoe to fall. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you've been trending up and all of a sudden you get this death blow. And so, you know, I'm walking around with this huge knot in my stomach most of the, you know,
no,
the next week.
I mean, you just had your son's wedding and, like, you should be able to enjoy life. You're coaching. You went to the coaching convention and all of this the entire time. You know, I don't know. You shouldn't have to do this. I apologize, you know, on behalf of the baseball community. You should already have been putting HOF when you're at your son's wedding. You should have signed HOF already from last.
Well, I think that's part of that, though. I mean, yeah, you know, I like the debate of baseball players. I think the debate of baseball players, I think the debate of the game is what's so awesome about the game. I think it's, you know, baseball isn't boring because you can debate it. Everything in baseball is debatable. The home run, the foul ball, the strike, these are the things that make the game so awesome. You know, why wouldn't you like to sit around the barbershop and go, hey, this Wagner kid, what do you think? You know, I've seen him do this. He was that. And I think all these things are debatable. And so I don't have a problem with that. I think the problem a lot of times it's not based on what we thought the process was going to be about and your numbers and, you know, your longevity and things like that. I think it's, to some extent, you know, you start getting the personal attacks and stuff like that. I mean, I mean, the thing that kills you is when somebody calls you and tells you why they're not voting for you. I think
who does that?
I can't say because I think that would. I mean, as much as I'd like to.
You don't have to say. But why would someone do that? Like,
oh, that's. I think, you know, being able to tell somebody why they're not good is. That's very personal, very, you know, I think those are tough situations because, you know, it's not, yeah, I mean, if you don't want to vote and you don't think I'm that quality, I get it. Am I going to disagree? Absolutely. But I also think that to personally attack saying, you know, I'm not going to vote for you because you're from Southwest Virginia and, you know, your political beliefs and things like that, that has nothing to do with baseball. You know, I think if you've had your morals and you've stayed in line and you know, you're not a felon and you're doing what you're supposed to do on the field. I mean, that's what you're being graded on.
Well, let me ask you, Billy. So first of all, I totally agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more. And anybody, in my view, anybody who doesn't view or doesn't vote for someone based on their merit as a baseball player shouldn't be voting. Have you had people say that to you? They've said, I'm not voting for you because of whatever.
Where I'm from.
Really?
Absolutely.
Well, that person should have their vote stripped from them. I'm like, they just should.
Well, but they use that as a badge of honor. I mean, I think those are the things. And I mean, you know, I mean, to be able to vote on somebody that never saw you or never, you know, who covers different things, you know, I mean, you got to be around it to know who that person is. I mean, I don't know every guy personally that's going in the Hall of Fame, but you know, the guys that are on that list are pretty dang gone good. I don't, you know, but I don't know them personally, but when I know stats, that's what you're working on. And I think the game is, you know, it's not about the personal side of what you are. It's about, you know, what you have accomplished, what you brought to the game. And, you know, there's so many, I don't know how you change the game anymore than, you know, some of these guys, all time greats were there. I mean, but, you know, I think to sit there and look at certain guys and say, you know, they're not worth it because of numbers is one thing. Mm. But, you know, the personal stuff, I think that gets hard to deal with.
Well, I think that your vote total has gone up, and as we said, gone up and up and up and up. And I think that for the most part, there are idiots like you talked about. I'll call them, you'll call them idiots. You don't have to, but they're idiots like you talked about. And they're idiots in that sense. Maybe they aren't not idiots in other parts of life, but when voting for the Hall of Fame is such an honor and such a privilege. And, you know, I think that everybody there's plenty of guys who have, you know, people might not get along with in a clubhouse. That shouldn't be part of the vote. But I do think that as it has gone along, I think that voters, there's more information, there's more research, there's more understanding, along with the people who saw you play, obviously. But there's also more avenues to see your excellence, to quantify your excellence. And I think that's an awesome thing. I think that's great. You know, it's not just, oh, well, let's look at the amount of stuff.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Faves, or let's look at whatever. There are so many different ways to look at it. And I do think, Billy, and I'm going to paint this in a positive light for voters, is that, yeah, they not only did I think that the majority of people who saw you pitch say, that's a Hall of Famer, that's a Hall of Fame pitcher, but now even the people who are voting who maybe didn't see you pitch, which there are some,
right. Yeah.
And they can say, well, hey, this adds up.
Well, the new voters have been the biggest jump for me, the new voters.
Yeah.
You know, and they're the ones who probably actually went to the games and watched me play. And, you know, hopefully I brought some joy to what they enjoy about baseball. And so, you know, we look back to the golden eras and what brought us happiness. You know, it was, the Mantles, Yastrzemskis. It was the Rices, it was the Barras, the Stan Musials. It was those type of people that brought that joy. But, you know, if you were a Cubs fan, you weren't liking Stan Musial. You know,
you should not vote for Stan Musial.
Right. You know? Could you imagine? I can't imagine who's the guy who didn't vote for Derek Jeter.
Yeah.
I mean, who didn't vote for Griffey? I mean, how is Ichiro going to get?
Well, just going to bring that up, Billy.
And I mean, not that he shouldn't. I'm not saying that at all. You're going to tell me that Ichiro, who was awesome, is going to get more respect than the guy like a Derek Jeter or a Griffey who every kid wears a hat on backwards because of that. But I mean, there's something just wrong with that.
Yeah. And it comes back to, I do think, like you said, people for the most part are more educated. And the people that I've talked to, like, so Billy, I've had a vote. This will be my fourth year. And, you know, I said before, nobody cares about, you know, I had to stop and start and whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But it's my fourth year. And as you're waiting, it's such an honor. And I do think the people who are getting it understand that honor. The more people I talk to, when they get that vote, they are taking it more serious than ever. Where, as you said, I think maybe, and I don't want to paint everyone with a broad brush, but there are some older guys or women or whatever who maybe are just like, I'm going to vote for one person because that's it. Well, you're not doing research. You're not looking into it. That's just it.
So. Well, and I mean, you look at the guys like Beltran and David Wright and, you know, Andrew Jones. And I mean, I think every guy that's on that list should be in the Hall of Fame because I played against them. And, you know, the Pedroias. For me, you know, the uniqueness of being, you know, like a Pedroia of that caliber size and what you bring to the game and the energy and you know, playing with Dustin for that short time, playing against Dustin, seeing those things, you know, it's kind of like looking at Altuve. What does Altuve do? You know, these are things for me that, you know, how did you change the game? Well, today you'll never find guys like Altuve and Pedroia. You know, if you find a pitcher under my size nowadays, I mean, it's unheard of. And so, you know, to do what I did when I was playing to is what they do now. I just think that to appreciate what you're looking at, you have to really see that. And I think a lot of, you know, the greatest credit a player ever gets is when he's, you know, of course, voted into the Hall of Fame, but it's the peers. I mean, to hear, you know, a Derek Jeter or a Nolan Ryan or somebody credit you with something that you wouldn't expect. I mean, those are the things. And so seeing the peers tell you how good you are, those are, I think those end up helping you get through these moments where you don't have, you know, you can look back and go, well, Derek Jeter said I had one of the best fastballs, or, you know, you feel a little bit better about yourself, but, you know, you know, I think, you know, I think if I wasn't to get in, I worry about some of the guys who are really, you know, are trendsetters like Kimbrel or Jensen or, you know, the kid out in Cleveland.
Manuel Class A. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Class A. I mean, here, these guys, you can't win games without closers. I mean, we could say this, but if you have that dude, it's really nice. I mean, can you imagine saying the Yankees were going to play a game without Mariano Rivera and, you know, a starter can't go? I mean, the days of the Whitey Fords and who would go out there and throw nine innings and stuff like that, you know, was different. Today's game was not played that same. And Eckersley, you know, helped to evolve, make this possible for somebody like me and the guys, you know, Hoffman and Trevor, because they condensed the game and said, well, wow, why don't we use this guy in this way? And so, you know, I worry about those guys behind me that maybe they're not valued in what they've done.
No, I do think it's important. I've talked to Kenley about this a lot the last couple of years, and I know that he really, really looks up to you and values you and understands the importance of you getting in. But you had mentioned guys like Altuve, Pedroia, and one of the things, like, obviously we go by numbers, we go by, you know, there has to be some semblance of numbers to start the conversation.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I haven't revealed my ballot yet, but spoiler alert, I've already revealed that I'm voting for Dustin. I'm obviously voting for you. And I think that one of the things when people are going to say, well, why did you vote for Dustin? And say, well, because I got to be honest with you, I can support it with numbers, but I also like that's, if I was going to say to a kid, and you coach kids, if I was going to say to a kid, same thing with watching you, that's who should represent baseball. That sort of player, that sort of personality, that sort of attitude, that, as you said, changing the game the way that both of you guys did, that has to be implemented, or that has to be taken into account too, I think. And I thought a lot about that when it comes to Dustin, believe.
Well, you know, and guys like, you know, Andrew Jones, who I played against.
Yes, another one.
I mean, you know, his numbers are unbelievable, but that's nothing. Smoltz, Glavine, Maddox, Danny Nagel, you know, these guys don't get these wins. They ain't getting these wins if that guy ain't out there. You know, that guy stopped the game. He changed the game defensively. I mean, we can talk about Devon White. We can talk about, but there's nobody in the outfield that's done things like he did in his 10-year prime when he came up at 19 years old. It was like Cabrera. Oh, my God. Him and Cabrera were ridiculous. I mean, how you pitch to him or how you watch them play and their moxie. I mean, you didn't know that they were so young when they rolled into that. And there's a certain guys when they rolled into the league that were game changers. And, you know, Dustin was very, very much like that. And, you know, if he doesn't get hurt, he's very much like David Wright. Mm-hmm. He doesn't get hurt. These guys don't get hurt. Moises Alou. Guys that, you know, had numbers and were building this may have been a completely different view of these things. But, you know, I think, you know, I'm going to be biased because I got to watch them. I got to play against them. And so, of course, you know, when you're in that moment with these guys and you're seeing them come through and you're in the daily grind with them, I don't think people can just sit and go, well, I watched him when they came in, because you missed that time when, you know, he just was saved three runs. He went 0-for-3, and you looked at the box score and, he was 0-for-3, two strikeouts, but he made two diving catches, threw a guy out. I mean, changed the game, and all of a sudden all you're looking at is Smoltz, Glavine, Maddox getting all these wins. And I mean, you know, that's part of, you can't have numbers without good teammates and great teams on that. And so that was part of it. I mean, you know, when Maddox and Glavine and those guys were coming at, you had Grisham and you had
Otis Nixon, right?
Otis Nixon, yeah. I mean, you had guys that, you know, David Justice, you had guys, I mean, some of the biggest plays in their careers were because they robbed a home run or threw a guy out at home plate. I mean, those are things that, you know, need to be involved in those discussions. And I don't think if you got to spend a week with Dustin Pedroia in the locker room, who walked around like you would have thought Dustin was 10 feet tall. I mean, you know, he wasn't a bully. He wasn't, but I'm going to tell you, you knew when he said something, that team reacted a different way. And I saw this in 6-8 weeks, you know, but you know, he's sitting there 1 minute playing, cribbage with,
Tito.
And next thing you know, I mean, he's up somebody's tail about, hey, you know, we need to lock it in, or him and David are bickering, or somebody's going at it. But I mean, you just don't know that until you're in there to see how that moxie is. I mean, the Chipper Joneses, guys that have been, you just don't know how that is. And I, you know, that's where when you're sitting around there and rubber meets the road and stuff like that. I mean, I used to drive Glavin in to Shea Stadium. And so, to hear how nervous he was about going for 300th win, you know, to these things like that, that, you know, you don't know how he got to that 300. That those are things that, you know, to understand, you have to really do your due diligence. You need to talk to people that were in there.
Well, that's the point. And I think that with the, you know, if you really took pride in your Hall of Fame vote, you would do that. You talk to people. If you don't know, like, if you don't know, if you have any questions, you talk to people, and or you do more research, whatever it is. But, you know, I was, and you hit the nail on the head in so many ways. The Andrew Jones thing is so spot on. I let me ask you this, is that, you know, you just went to the coaches convention in Washington, right?
Right.
What is, you know, we don't want to be like old men yelling at clouds, right? We don't want to be, oh, the
right,
game.
Right.
There's a lot of good stuff happening in the game. There's a lot of great technology. There's a lot of great things. What is the thing that you like, instead of saying, hey, you know what, this isn't going well, what do you like about where baseball's going, having coached it and also having seen other coaches hearing them talk?
Well, I think because we've evolved into the technology side, there is more of a discussion on how we as coaches use that to grow the game with kids, because kids see the numbers and they go, they think spin rates, everything's valued in a spin rate. Our job as coaches, we, you know, and it's always that fight. How do I get that kid to get off of looking at numbers and thinking about winning? Because I want him to throw hard. I want him to hit the ball hard. I want him to run fast. I want all these metrics to work out, but how do I get him the best out of him with the numbers he has and give him confidence to do that? I think being around these coaches, high school, college, and pro coaches, you know, everybody has a different thought on how to do it. But I think it's the communication, the tidbits that you get, everything that these coaches are saying. And, you know, I think that's, for me, what I enjoy the most. When I'm there, I'm up at all hours of the night, and you know, I really enjoy talking the game and how these guys make their team successful, and understanding that there's things that do work for a high school coach and there's things that do not work for a high school coach. And you know, there's some metrics that are better left for the college that doesn't need to be put into the high school database and thought process for these kids. But you know, it's really, you know, an opportunity to really, if you love the game, being around it and talking to these coaches, you see that they love this, the game, and they want it to be great. But they fight the same battles that, you know, that coach from Southwest Virginia who's got one assistant, you know, it's 3 feet of snow on the ground right now, and, you know, they got to get ready in 4 weeks. And, you know, some of these coaches have been in those shoes, and those are the ones that help that coach to get through that moment of stress of like, well, how do I get these kids ready? How do I do these things? How do I set practice plans? And even though I played and stuff, I was blessed with so many coaches I was able to reach out to and go, you know, high school coaches really were very good at saying, these are things that work. These is the stuff. And I mean, I go to these things to hear how to make these kids successful. And so, Pudge Gorman at James Madison High School, who coached Bryce Eldridge, you know, guys like him, Rob Honey, who's on the board of the ABCA, who coaches down at Chantilly. These coaches love baseball. They love making kids better. And you just see it when you go to the ABCA that, you know, these kids, guys, there's guys that have passion in this sport. And those are the guys I like being around. I love having the conversations. Todd Fitzgerald down in Stoneman Douglas, who we play every year and stuff. I mean, you know, I love playing those teams. I love my kids getting challenged by those teams, win, lose, or draw. But I learn so much when I'm down there, winning or losing or whatever, because there's just a conversation about the kid being successful. The win and losses for a coach are irrelevant. The success for the kid who goes out there and learns how to compete against a high level or learns how to handle a loss. These are the things as a coach, you're building young men and women, this type of character. And that's the accountability and the stuff that real coaches want for their team.
And so you have a son who's a major leaguer. I'm anxious to hear you with Will. I'm sure you talked to him about, they're doing this, right? They do this at the major league level. and you're probably like, they do? They didn't do that when I played.
Oh, yes. We have those discussions a lot. I mean, it is different, you know. And I think it's a conversation that, you know, when I watch the strike zone, that's the biggest thing for me. I'm like, I could never pitch in that right there, you know. And I think guys like, can you imagine Bob Gibson or, you know, Nolan pitching in that? Their stuff was electric. Either way, they'd have been very successful, but – you know, the ability to knock somebody down or, you know, hit a guy or take out a guy when they slide, you know, those things like that, you know. And I was just watching Will take out Ozzy. And then they're swinging. They're going after it, you know. Yeah. I mean, it was different, you know, or Pete Rose taking out a catcher in the All-Star game. The game has about, you're not seeing that. A guy that throws a ball inside now, that very rarely is that meant to happen. You know, it's just evolved. And these pitchers today, the athletes today, are 10 times the athletes we were when we were playing. I mean, every guy looks like a Greek god. They're built different. They train different. And, you know, to sit there and watch, you know, Garrett Cole pitch, it's electrifying. I just sit there and you know, how good they are and have to pitch in a box, and they can get questioned now. Now guys can tap their hats or challenge this or challenge that. And, you know, it's only going to get worse. The one thing I give Will a hard time is, you know, and I always tell him, I said, I don't know why hitters aren't hitting 400. I mean, you got to really throw the ball right down the middle. And of course that gets, you know, pitcher, hitter, father, son, it's always in jest. But, you know, I tell you, the game, it tells you how hard this game really is when the strike zone is still the way it is, and you have guys who strike out so much and they have such low batting average. Tony Gwynn, Wade Boggs, Paul Molitor, they might have hit 450. I mean, just because they weren't going to try to do anything, and they just beat you to death. I mean, but that's the old-time player looking at this.
Yeah, you're saying, Will, why aren't you hitting 450? Let's go. But, another aspect I'm curious, because he comes up as a rookie. You know, this is another thing that's changed, right? And I don't know if he would ever admit to his dad. I don't even know if this is a dad-father-son conversation. Right. It's like, oh, they're being really nice to me. And dad's saying, well, that's not how it used to be, you know?
Well, you know what? He's used to the locker rooms, which is good. But, you know, He's very low maintenance. That's the good thing. He knows how to deal with stuff. And through all my mistakes and stuff, he was in the locker room quite a bit when I was coming to, and you know, many a car ride home was like, hey, Will, you probably should never do what I just did. Or, hey, you know, sometimes this is what it takes. And I think, you know, he walks in there and you got big leaguers' sons that are on that team also.
Yeah.
I mean, Don Varsho, I mean, Will played ball with him when Gary was my bench coach for the Phillies.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, having some familiarity always helps, and having big leaguer sons on that team, you know, everybody kind of knows, hey, we know what it's about. And your job is just to learn how to earn your spot, earn your stripes, do your thing. I remember when he said, you know, that they were going to, you know, the singing or the dancing on the plane or whatever. I'm like, I would do that every day to be in the big leagues. I remember, I mean, I had to carry a beer bag and soaking wet, and I'm in a suit, and I was like the happiest guy. I'm like, there's four cases of beer, and I'm chugging it up. I'm totally happy with it, you know, because, you know, I'm in the big leagues. I could care less. And, you know, the thing that I told Will that I wish I would have done more was really enjoyed the game more, because when I was doing, I had no idea. I didn't have a dad who played. I didn't know how to enjoy it. It was, you know, business every moment, and you had to be serious. But now I tell him, you smile every day. Every day is a blessing, because you get to do something. And this is not a job. Yes, you're working, but I said, you could really be working. And so, you know, I think that has been the conversations that we've had, that, you know, when he gets really uptight, or I'm like, hey, listen, from the outside, this is going to pass. You're fine. So,
man, listen, I could talk to you for three straight days. Although if I could, Billy, I would talk to you all the way up until the announcement on Tuesday, just to keep your mind off things. But I will say this is that, you know, I know that you envision the day, the speech, you know, the field, the stage, all of that. But I'm going to tell you right now, because you're getting in, I'm going to tell you right now that a day that is very underrated is a day in May. And I say this because David Ortiz, I was honored that David asked me and another writer to be with him on this day in May when nobody else is in Cooperstown and they give the private tour of the Baseball Hall of Fame. And you, I mean, there's no one there. This is Cooperstown in May. No one's there. And you go, you hold Babe Ruth's bat, you know, you see this stuff, and I can't wait for you to get in, but I can't wait for you to experience that, because that is a time where you just get a chance to, that's where they show the video, about a 50-minute video, and I was sitting next to David, and I look over, and he's getting very emotional. That'll be a great day. And I want you to focus on the great days that are ahead, because there are going to be great days ahead.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to it. I know it's a tough process, but you know, like I said, it's all out of my hands, but you know, I'm excited at the possibilities.
Yeah. Well, it'll be great. It'll be great. And again, spoiler, I voted for you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Again. All right. Thanks, Billy.
Yes, Rob. Appreciate you.